Chapter 13. Planes, Trains and Rocket Launches. Today. They'd just arrived at JFK Airport. Neither Pete nor Adam felt particularly well rested, but Adam's excitement kept their spirits high. "Did you see how tall some of those buildings were?" Adam exclaimed as they made their way through the private arrivals gate.
"Yes, the architecture here is truly marvellous. But first things first, we need to find an ATM. I have no dollars."
They walked through a set of automatic doors into the public foyer of the terminal. It was teeming with life.
"Amazing! I've got a great feeling about this place. I can almost feel the sword in my hand. Oh, my friend, we are going to do it," Adam cried triumphantly.
Pete laughed loudly, casting nervous glances at the passerby who had just turned to stare at Adam.
He had a little bit too much to drink on the plane," said Pete,
which wasn't strictly a lie. He patted Adam on the back, murmuring under his breath,
"Best not to shout stuff like that in a crowded airport."
"Gotcha," said Adam, with finger guns.
He'd seen an actor do it in a film as part of the in-flight entertainment. It had really tickled him. Pete chose to ignore it.
"We have to get a taxi. Shouldn't be too much bother. And then..."
Adam had stopped in his tracks.
"Something wrong?"
Adam was watching the arrivals gate. People from all over the world were pouring out of it to be met by loved ones. A child ran as fast as her little legs would carry her, leaping like a coiled spring into her father's arms. An old woman was standing almost on tiptoes, holding a sign as big as she was with the name Edgar written in spindly writing. A young woman with all her worldly possessions on her back was embraced by her parents. They both looked so relieved. I've always liked this bit, the welcome homes. I've stood by city gates, on ports, at the end of mountain passes. The way people travel changes. But this bit is always the same.
"Me too," said Pete. "Have you ever seen... Oh, no. Of course you haven't. Yeah, but this part of humanity, it does make an old man a little proud."
Adam nodded, wondering if he'd ever be allowed this moment. Another excited group came through arrivals, and Adam and Pete watched in silence, unaware that all the while someone was watching them. They were being observed by a large man squeezed into a chauffeur's uniform that was a few sizes too small for him. The man was sure it was them, but he sniffed the air one more time, just to be certain. It was all he could do to keep himself from ripping them both to pieces right there and then. But he had his orders. He reached for the strange device he'd been given the week before. He didn't like it. It was too much like magic, and he had always hated magic. He reluctantly unlocked it with his face.
"Call Diana!"
he barked into the small black box. It played a short tune, and he held it up to his ear, careful not to let it touch his skin.
"He's landed!"
Diana did not attend the red carpet events with her mother or sisters. She did not appear in any of the magazines. Every time her name was added to a website, it was taken down almost as quickly. This had been the deal she'd made. Diana would work for her mother again, so long as she got to keep her freedom and privacy. She was glad of the work. She loved walking the earth, hunting and tracking as she pleased. Access to her mother's resources made that sport easier, and the jobs she was given were challenges she relished. And this one would be the sweetest of all. She had got to know the first man many moons ago in the form of one of his aliases. They were even close. She had been a goddess then, and he had believed in her, even prayed to her, or so she thought. And she had seen a kindred spirit in him. He was hunting too, always hunting. But he was hunting one thing in particular, and it wasn't her. The heart can change a lot in 5,000 years. And Diana's had turned cold and hard, though its core still smouldered. It had been half an hour since the chauffeur had called about her quarry's arrival in the city, and her mind was now focused. Diana came here as a ritual before every big hunt. It was her quiet, simple, private sanctuary. The steam rose off the plunge pool as she broke the surface, every one of the muscles of her Olympian body ready. As she strode from the water, her skilled fingers quickly worked her long ebony hair into a functional braid that reached down to her waist. She slipped on a black tracksuit with white piping zipping it up. It fitted her perfectly, allowing for complete mobility. It had been a gift from her mother. The white trainers she wore with it were one of the few vanity purchases she'd allowed herself. She had seen them in a window of a busy shopping mall. The hue had reminded her of a midsummer full moon. Diana made her way over to an empty quiver, laying ready on its small marble plinth. She ran her fingers over its black leather and gold embroidery, checking for any imperfections. This was her oldest possession, but she had little sentimentality for it. Just last year she'd cut off the old leather thong, replacing it with a sturdier nylon strap that she now clicked into place. Diana kept the quiver because her uncle did excellent work. That was all there was to it. Now she was dressed for the hunt. Diana ran a quick systems check on her best weapons. Her ears tuned, her nose twitched, and her large green eyes opened wide. She pushed the bar lever on the only door to the room, the one with the pleasant glowing green sign that read Exit, and walked out into the morning sun of New York City. Her chariot awaited. Her servant had returned from the airport, looking as uncomfortable as ever, his hulking frame fit to burst out of his chauffeur's uniform. She slid herself into the back seat of the sleek black car. Her driver closed the door behind her, and they drove into Manhattan to find Diana's prey. Dominic Dom Clements had been driving a New York cab for 30 years. He often complained about the work, but secretly he loved it. Dom was a people person, and in his profession he met all kinds of people. The airport was his favourite pickup. He liked to guess where his passengers were from, and he hadn't been wrong in 10 years. He'd become so good at it that he'd learnt the phrase, "Welcome to New York City," in over 50 languages. As he pulled into the taxi stand of JFK for the third time that morning, he did a little equation in his head, counting the cars in front of him and the people in the line to determine which customers would be his. Who would he meet next? His bet was on the black guy in the camel coat and his father. As Adam and Pete waited at the taxi rank, Adam asked, "Something on your mind?" Pete had been awfully quiet since their people watching inside. Pete cleared his throat.
"Well, I have to ask, as you've not seen it pertinent to tell me up front," said the old man, his voice nervous. "What are you planning to do with the sword? You've tried to use it to find her before."
Adam gave his friend a small twinkle. "Yes, but this time is different. Take the name I have given you. Use the compass the lady still keeps for you. Find the temple and free her." A bright yellow New York cab pulled up alongside them. Adam opened the door for Pete and they both clambered into the back.
"What's different? Why are you being so cagey? Oh, God. This is going to be me or Lena all over again."
Pete shook his head, fastening his seatbelt.
"It was one little storm," Adam protested.
Dom adjusted his rearview mirror to get a better look at his new customers. Strange-looking fellas, no luggage either.
Maybe they were dropping someone off. No, that didn't fit. These two were definitely not New Yorkers.
Where to, fellas? He asked.
Central Park, please,
said the old man before turning back to his companion.
The park's quite large, my friend. Any particular spot?
Anywhere by the park will do fine. Thank you.
Dom started driving, but he couldn't resist sneaking glances at them in the mirror. They were obviously in the middle of some sort of disagreement. Dom had noticed that people often fought on their way back from airports.
A little storm? You lost an entire city.
Maybe they were weathermen.
It was evacuated, insisted the younger guy.
How can you be so old and yet still so naive?
The old man asked. He sounded tired. Dom got the impression that it was a long-held exhaustion. There was silence.
So, you boys' first time in the Big Apple?
Asked Dom, trying to diffuse the tension.
Yes, said Pete flatly.
Dom thought it best to leave them to it for now. Let them hash it out, and maybe they'd want to chat later. He still hadn't quite figured out where they were from either, and he didn't want to throw away his 10-year perfect score.
I don't mean to snap at you, Adam, said the old man suddenly. It's just I've seen you be in so much pain for so long.
The car came off the expressway and into the city.
I really don't want to witness you making another mistake. You always feel so guilty when it goes wrong.
Adam was hunched up, his expression surly. Pete was one of the small handful of people in existence who could make Adam feel like this, like a scolded child. But, as always, he knew he should probably listen. The cab drove slowly past block after block. The traffic got denser, the buildings grew taller, and a large black car pulled out of an alleyway behind them.
I found him. My driver picked up his scent at the airport. Diana told her mother from the back seat of her car, the phone held in the crook of her neck as she dusted her hands with fine magnesium carbonate.
Good. No toying, Diana. Chain him quick.
June's voice came through loud and clear. Diana could even hear her mother sipping her martini.
There's a complication, said Diana coolly. He's with Prometheus.
Diana heard June drain the rest of her drink in one long sup. Take them both. Make me proud. June hung up. Diana put down her phone and cricked her neck. She unbuckled her seatbelt and opened the sunroof. Her chauffeur smiled, teeth bared.
This time it's different. I have a real lead, said Adam.
He swallowed. If he was going to be in trouble with Prometheus, he might as well get it all out of the way in one go. He turned as much as his seatbelt would allow to face his old friend.
Look, I broke into heaven last week.
Adam said it as fast and as casually as he could. If he said it quickly, his old friend might not register it. Pete's head fell into his hands. Dom mouthed, "Heaven," to himself in the car mirror. Diana poked her head out of the limo's sunroof.
You did what?
Cried Pete, whose shock had turned to anger in a heartbeat.
See, this is why I didn't tell you. I knew you'd make it into a big deal, scowled Adam.
It is a big deal, Adam. It's a huge deal. Why would you? Of all the...
The old man appeared to have started to hyperventilate. Dom was not focusing on the road at all now. This was by far the most intriguing conversation he'd ever overheard. Diana reached into her seemingly empty quiver and began to rummage.
I jumped through the breach, gave them the slip. As far as they know, I could be in any realm in creation right now.
About 300 yards behind them, Diana found what she was looking for. She pulled out the Friday Fortune Class 472L RPG and aimed it carefully at the cab.
Just breathe, said Adam to the old man. It's all going to be fine. Dom was the only one who saw the rocket launch. He processed everything remarkably quickly, though he had no time to react.
Heart disease, he thought. I was supposed to die from heart disease.
That was what had got his father and his grandfather. The rocket sped down East 55th Street. Adam, a veteran of 1,000 wars, reacted on instinct when he heard it. He'd just managed to undo Pete's seatbelt and click open the passenger door as the tip of the rocket touched the back bumper. Having driven a cab for 30 years, nothing much surprised Dom. Stabbings, shootings, car crashes, he'd seen them all. But a rocket launcher, that was new and extremely surprising. In his rear-view mirror, his last ever passengers were plunged into silhouette. He could see the younger man throwing himself and his friend out of the door. He never would find out where they were from. The explosion was deafening. Something flashed gold. The pain, when the fire reached him, was excruciating. But it stopped once his nerve endings were gone. Dom's two passengers hit the concrete. Adam covered himself and Pete as much as possible. The true gold of the coat gleamed brightly as it repelled the heat and flame. Without giving him a second to catch his breath, Adam pulled the old man to his feet. He could see the fire reflected in his glasses and the look of panic in his eyes. He was a civilian in a war zone.
"Prometheus, run!" Adam shouted. "The driver!" cried Pete.
Adam ran to the burning cab and tore open the door. He pulled out the badly burnt driver and laid him gently on the ground. Dom could just about make out the face of the younger man. He had almost grey eyes, and they were glistening. The stranger in the glowing gold coat pressed his brow to his. "You are going to die now. And it's my fault," the young man said slowly and calmly. "You will see your family again. Get off at the right stop and tell Charon Medusa's still kicking. I'm sorry." Dom didn't understand most of these words, but they were comforting somehow, and it was nice to be so close to someone at the end. Adam stood up. Diana, goddess of the hunt, well, former goddess, was sprinting at full speed towards him. "I said run," Adam yelled at Prometheus, who seemed rooted to the spot before charging forward to engage with their attacker. Diana swung her fist at Adam's head. He managed to dart inside the blow and use her own momentum to push her fist away. Her other hand was already coming for him in a vicious jab aimed directly for his eyes. He only just moved his head in time. He felt one of her razor-sharp fingernails open his cheek. Blood fell freely dripping from his jaw, red drops onto shining gold. But Diana had launched this blow with such fury she had left her own body open. Adam kicked her hard in the chest. It would have broken a normal sternum. To Adam, it felt like he just kicked a tree. Diana stumbled back a foot, straightened herself, and smiled. Adam began to panic. It had been a long time since he'd fought anyone with her composition. He would have to get inventive. As Diana bounced like a boxer waiting for the next round, Adam noticed her long black braid swinging behind her. She was strong as a tree, but not as heavy as one. Adam sprang back a few feet in order to create space for more acceleration and then charged the former goddess again. Diana widened her stance, readying herself for the impact. It was a pose Adam had seen many opponents strike who believed they were physically superior. It was what he was counting on. When he was almost within her grasp, Adam, in one swift movement, dropped to the floor and slid between her legs. Now behind her, he reached up with both hands and grasped the ebony plait. With a tremendous heave, he stood tall and flipped his opponent clear over his head, bringing her smashing down onto the concrete. Adam didn't waste any time checking how injured she was. He grabbed Pete,
who had yet to move, still frozen in shock, and ran into a nearby alleyway.
Dom was strangely calm, still alive and a little puzzled. He hadn't seen the fight. He was too busy trying to decipher what the young man's words had meant. The nuns had told him that when you died, God would judge you, and that there were three places you could go. Where would he end up? Heaven, hell, or purgatory? A few people had started to gather around him, staring. Dom was beginning to think they were being rude, not helping. Then he saw the birds frozen in the sky. But not just the birds. Everything was still, silent. Until he heard the unmistakable rumble of a train arriving at its stop. It was a locomotive the likes of which Dom had never seen. Art Deco in design, with a sleek metallic frame and passenger cars with stained glass windows. It hissed comfortingly, like a boiling kettle that had just been taken off the stove, ready to make a nice strong cup of coffee. Sunlight bounced off the polished silver roof, an intense glare that hit Dom straight in the eyes. He instinctively lifted his right hand to shield himself and was surprised to find it remarkably intact. But when he looked down, he saw that same hand, burnt and motionless. Dom leant forward to get a better look and felt his head leave his head. He stood up quickly and stared down at his own burnt body, dead on East 55th Street, his reliable cab behind him in ruins, engulfed in frozen flames. The train doors opened with a ding. It was the same ding the elevator at his parents' apartment building used to make. His dad would get in the elevator and Dom would race up the stairs, trying to beat him to the top. Dom looked up, half expecting to see his old man standing there. But it was not his father framed in the now open train doors. Dom was looking at a man he'd never met, with a very pleasant face. He was wearing a dark suit on his neat, slight frame, the chain of a gold pocket watch hanging from his waistcoat. Dom thought he looked like an upmarket hotel concierge. The figure stepped down from the train and gave him a small bow. "Welcome, sir," he said. "I'm dead," said Dom, by way of response. Dom didn't phrase it as a question, but the suited man answered him anyway. "I'm afraid so, sir. Do you have your coin?" Dom reached absent-mindedly for his wallet before remembering it was in the glove compartment. "Try your jacket pocket, sir," the man from the train said, tapping his own breast pocket. Dom reached inside and felt something round and heavy. He pulled out a larger-than-average gold coin. The tail side showed a tree in full leaf, with branches and roots stretching out to the coin's edges. Dom flipped it over. On the head side was an embossed version of his own profile, complete with the date of his birth and today's date engraved in tiny letters around its edge, and there was an inscription, "Dominic Dom Clements." He got 103,212 people safely to their destinations. "That's the one, sir." Dom handed over the coin. "My name is Charon. I'll be escorting you on this journey. If you want for anything, you need only ask." Charon. That was the name the stranger had said. "Excuse me," said Dom. "Medusa's still kicking." Charon's smile widened. "Indeed she is, sir. Let's see if we can pop you into first class, shall we?" And with that, Charon held out his hand, helping Dom onto the train. The train doors dinged again and closed behind them. The trackless wheels began to spin. The train left for its next destination. And New York City came back to life.
You've been listening to Evergreen, Chapter 13, written by Sam Russell and read by Catherine Russell. If you enjoyed this chapter, wherever you're listening, please subscribe, give us a rating and a review so we can get this story into more people's ears. And if you really enjoyed it and you want to support this project, you can do so on our Ko-fi page. All details are available on our Twitter account, @EvergreenBook1. The next chapter comes out on November the 29th. Thanks for listening.